Evening, everyone. Welcome to the juice. It is Tuesday, and well, I didn't upload a podcast last week. I was a little busy, and also last week was one of the more unenjoyable sports weeks. I think there weren't, to be perfectly honest. I mean, for starters, there were no good college football games on, and then the Packers lost, which kind of sucked. That was a heartbreaker. But this week we got a lot to talk. We got a decent amount to talk about. I'm gonna get into the ESPN headlines. I'm gonna talk about the Packer game. I'm gonna talk about Colorado's debacle, and just for fun, I'll give you my top 10 quarterbacks in college football because out of all the years I've been watching college football, that's got to be one of the harder lists to make because there are just so many good quarterbacks. Hell, you could do a very good top five list for just the top five quarterbacks in the Pac-12. But yeah, so that's what we're gonna get into today. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. So to begin, we're gonna talk about the Packers win over the New Orleans Saints on Sunday. And I got a couple things to get into about that game. For starters, I don't know what it is about the Packers, but it feels like we're the only team in the NFL where all five, arguably all five, your top five players are all on the injury report. Last on Sunday, Dave Bakhtiari is still nursing his knee injury that he sustained on New Year's Eve of 2020, an ACL injury. I honestly did not mind him sitting out the whole entire next year, and he did try to play that next season, and also he tore his ACL literally at the right at the end of the 2020 season. And if you miss the 2021 season, I guess he's an older guy, ACL injury, maybe it doesn't heal as easy. So last year he even tried to, 2 years ago he even tried to play the last game of the season, realized he couldn't do it, and then we ended up losing to the 49ers. Would have liked to see him play there. And then the year after, the injury just continues to linger, and then he actually starts. He eventually consistently ends up playing the second half of the season last year. This year, plays the first game, looks incredible, and then sits out the next 2 weeks. I don't get it. And he says it's not about the turf. So, what are we? I mean, I don't know what we're supposed to do with this Dave Bakhtiari situation. I don't know if you can trust him to play, even just 14 games in a season. And he's getting paid very, very well. I think he's the top highest paid tackle in football, or top three. I'm not sure. He signed his deal a while ago, so there might have been some deals after him. But so the Dave Bakhtiari situation is annoying to me. So is the Christian Watson situation. That guy just, if he hurts his hamstring, expect him to be out at least a month, which is frustrating because him being on the field completely opens up our entire offense. Currently, we're dealing with receivers that can't exactly separate, especially downfield. I love Romeo Doubs, but he's not exactly the deep threat that Christian Watson is. Jaden Reed is a pure slot guy. And I like Luke Musgrave a lot, but you can't rely on a tight end to be your downfield threat. So Christian Watson's very important. The Aaron Jones situation, I hate shitting on Aaron Jones because he is our best offensive player. But the only problem I really had is after the Bears game, he said, I'm fine. Like he said, I'll be good. It sounded as if he could have went back in the Bears game if it wasn't a blowout. Then he misses the Falcons game, and then he misses the Saints game. Again, that's just kind of a frustrating injury that I don't really understand. Jair, I guess, got a back injury in practice. Not much to say about that. And then the Elgton Jenkins one was bad luck because AJ Dillon fell on him because he can't stay on his feet. So, I mean, all those injuries frustrating in their own ways, but Dave Bakhtiari is arguably the best left tackle in football outside of Trent Williams. And if you don't have a guy like that that you can consistently rely on to just play, that makes things so difficult for Jordan Love. And it is his blind side. So I just don't really know David Bakhtiari snapped at the media last week during his press conference, and I don't exactly blame him. You know, it is his body. He knows how to do it. But like, man, what leg do you have to stand on? Like, you played most of last year. You played the first game of the season, looked fantastic. Why are you not playing? Like, I hate to say it, but if you're a true competitor, you should be out there. Nothing should stop you from being out there, especially when you know you can play at a high level, which he did in the Bears game. I don't know. Whole thing is really weird to me. I was shocked he didn't play the Lambeau game, the game in Lambeau, the home opener, because he loves that field. It's grass. And he still didn't play. I mean, I guess that confirms that it's not about the turf, which I guess is good to know, because if he just said, I'm not going to play on games that we're playing on turf, then that'd be frustrating because half the NFL fields are turf. But the game itself, I mean, man, that those first three quarters were disgusting. They were disgusting. We had, I mean, I don't know how many penalties we had. It was close to 15, I'm assuming. It was close to 10 to 15. That was frustrating to watch. And, you know, when you have so many players, so many young guys playing in spots they're not used to in terms of, like, you know, starting. Royce Newman looked terrible. He was in for Elgton Jenkins. Rashid Walker looked really good in pass protection, which I'm, you know, extremely excited about because that's just another, you know, mid to late round draft pick that the Packers got that's just going to succeed at the offensive line, which I love to see. Zach Tom got injured, but it sounds to me like he's not this it's not going to be a lingering injury. He might not play Thursday, but we'll see. And other than that, I mean, Romeo Dobbs he's a dude. Romeo Dobbs is an incredible route runner, but more importantly, he is a guy that Jordan Love trusts when it comes to, you know, one-on-one situations. You know, for a guy his size, being the red zone threat that he is, really impressive. And you know, in terms of all the weapons, I mean, it's hard to not be excited about him. Jaden Reed, while he had some drops, got open. He can separate. And I said enough about Romeo Dobbs. He's just a guy that Jordan Love can trust to throw to in a one-on-one situation, which is always valuable to have. I'd say Romeo's even better in that in those types of situations than Christian Watson is. So it's nice to have receivers that, you know, are good at all different spots. Then you have Luke Musgrave, who looked fantastic. And people have been saying this about Luke Musgrave ever since he arrived at camp. You know, he's for a guy his size, you know, 6'6" frame, being able to move the way he can. And honestly, he does. Honestly, there are questions about his ability to block, you know, being an inline tight end coming out of college. And that's what we drafted Tucker Kraft. Luke Musgrave looks fine in run and pass protection. So I'm excited about the weapons we have. The second Aaron Jones gets back, that immediately opens up the offense's running game and, you know, gives us the ability to actually get big plays on the ground because AJ Dillon isn't that. AJ Dillon, at this point in his career, I would only use him as a goal line running back. 'Cause he doesn't, aside from the fact that he really can't, you know, hit holes hard and get, you know, a 15-yard gain after a couple, you know, broken tackles, some stuff that he would do in his first years in the league. He just makes too many dumb mistakes, like slipping. Like, stop slipping. It's that easy. He just doesn't have the burst. I guess the reason he does slip is because he tries to, you know, show that he has a burst. And when he does that, his feet can't contain him and he falls to the ground. So those are the things that need to stop. In terms of the defensive side, Rashawn Gary is one of the best pass rushers in football, yet we're still having him on a snap count. I think he looks good. I'd keep him out there 100% of the time. Kenny Clark did his thing, arguably the best player in our defense outside of maybe Rashawn Gary. He's just fantastic. For a defensive lineman who, you know, has, you know, Aaron Donald-esque pass rushing ability, and, you know, he's not even 30 yet, and he's been in the league for, what, 6, 7 years? Unbelievable. Devondre Campbell got hurt. Got to keep an eye on that. Quay Walker looks good as always. That pick is really starting to pay its dividends. And yeah, I mean, Olave kind of torched us a little bit, but other than that, without Jair, we kept the receivers in check, which was, really good to see. Really good to see. I think the only reason that this game was like we were down 17-0 at half is because we were beating ourselves. And I'm not saying that like the Packers are just some great team where the only way they can lose is to themselves. I legitimately mean that, like, the amount of penalties we were committing and the amount of miscommunications with Love and the receivers, and on top of that, our, run game not being able to, our running backs not being able to, make plays. Patrick Taylor screwed up a couple times, and AJ Dillon just isn't giving you any burst. I mean, that's literally the reason why the score was 17-0. So, I mean, this was a big win. It says a lot about Jordan Love to be able to come back from down 17 points in the fourth quarter. That's something that not a lot of young, first year starting quarterbacks get the chance to prove they can do because sometimes the spotlight's just too big for them, but it wasn't for Jordan Love. And I guess that's what you get when you have a guy who was sitting for 3 years and got to learn from a guy who was always put in those moments in Aaron Rodgers. So, obviously a great win against a very good defense. Just a lot of those mistakes, they can happen, and hopefully they get fixed. But with a coach like Matt LaFleur, it's hard to say because these have been things that have been issues with the Packers for years upon years with Matt LaFleur. It's just, beating ourselves. I mean, if you look at the playoff losses against the 49ers didn't beat us. We beat ourselves, and to some degree, the Buccaneers lost while they, got off to a big lead against us in the third quarter, and late second half. The Scotty Miller touchdown on Kevin King, that was us beating ourselves. Kevin King may suck, but why are you in that coverage? And then Aaron Jones fumbling in the first drive of the third quarter. I mean, all those things. It's just, it's discipline. It's discipline. And that's something that I'd like to see with the Packers moving forward. Now let's talk about a certain game that happens Saturday afternoon. Colorado Buffaloes got absolutely blitzed by the Oregon Ducks and Bo Nix. And all I have to say to this is I saw this coming. Now, if people who watch this podcast probably believe that I am a Deion Sanders fan, I am. I do like Deion Sanders. I love what he's doing with Colorado. He's turning them from the worst team in the Power Five last year to, an average college football team. And people will call that a shot. That's absolutely not. It's absolutely not a shot. What Deion Sanders is doing to Colorado, it's something we've never seen. You've never seen a high-profile coach go into one of the worst programs in Power Five and make them relevant and make them, the talk of college football in this year. And it's fine that they're the talk of college football this year. Deion Sanders is one of the most popular athletes of all time, and he, has got some great transfers. His son is fantastic, and his top transfer in Travis Hunter is going to be one of the top picks in next year's NFL draft, and who knows what positions he's going to play. It's a lot of storylines, a lot of headlines that deserve the respect that they're getting. However, when the media started making it seem like Colorado actually has a chance to compete against the best teams in college football, that is where I drew the line. Actually, I started drawing the line when Colorado stormed the field after barely beating Colorado State. If you're the program that the media was saying that Deion Sanders, Colorado Buffaloes are, you would not be storming the field after beating Colorado State in overtime. The great programs see that game as a loss. We escape with a win. We did not deserve to win. And when we're going up against a far inferior opponent, that is, that's not who we are. Like, we got to be better. But that was never that's not the program that Colorado is. So, all in all, I mean, okay. No ranked team should get their field stormed after beating Colorado State. But it is a big year for Colorado, and wins mean everything. But when you get treated as a premier team in college football by the media, that's when things start to get a little over the top. And then also, when I watch media members on television thinking that they actually had a chance against Oregon, it just goes to show how much of a smokescreen this whole thing was. If you look real deeply into the Colorado football program, you realize that they're not a good team. They cannot run the ball. Like, I think that through these first four games, I think they might total probably 200 rushing yards, probably less, because the last two games they haven't been able to run the ball whatsoever. Shedeur Sanders isn't really much of a threat with his legs to this point, so they're getting nothing from the running attack. They're very, not going to say undersized, but they're pretty soft up front. In pretty much every game they've played this year, they've either been dominated at the line of scrimmage, which was what Colorado State did, or it's been even, but Colorado's talent, gives them the extra edge in the TCU and Nebraska game. And by talent, I mean their talent on the outside. They have great receivers. They have one really good corner, but other than that, and then they have a solid linebacker in Shiloh Sanders. Other than that, this team was never very good. But the fact that they've already won three games is incredibly impressive, and they should have been, and the praise that they were getting from the media is perfectly fine in that sense. But in the sense that people thought that the Oregon and Colorado game would be close, and the fact that people are surprised and angry at Dan Lanning for his comments and that stuff, I don't blame Dan Lanning. I mean, if you're a college football coach and you're seeing the roster that Colorado has and all the hype that they're getting for no reason other than the fact that Deion Sanders is their coach, that would piss me off a little bit. But yeah, I think it needed to happen. People need to real the media and everyone need to realize that this team is not there yet whatsoever. I believe in about 2 or 3 years, they'll be maybe at the level that Oregon is at this year, but I mean, as long as Deion stays there. If he's not, then they're just going to go back to nothing and no one will care about him. But all in all, I'm, pleased with the outcome. I expected the outcome. I thought there's literally zero chance Colorado actually is in this game. There's a reason why the spread was 21. Probably should have been more if nobody knew that Deion Sanders was their coach. But yeah, that was a beatdown, and it could have been far, far worse. All right, now let's take a look at some lines. NFL lines. I didn't do this 2 weeks ago, so I remembered to do it this week. So let's start with Lions Packers. This is the Thursday night game in Green Bay. The line is Lions -1.5. As a Packer fan, I would obviously take Packers money line here. But what I also know is that we found out today that Christian Watson and Aaron Jones are most likely going to play. So if you take all that into account, take into account the fact that Dave Bakhtiari also might play on a grass field. I in Lambeau, I think this line should have been a pick 'em. Because again, it's not like the Chiefs win was impressive, but the more I think about it, maybe this line is fair. Because they did just beat the Falcons, who the Packers genuinely couldn't stop 2 weeks ago. So I guess that tells a lot about the Packers and the Lions and the difference there. But, prime time in Lambeau Field, Packers get their weapons back, along with some bias with myself. I'll take Packers money line here. Falcons, Jags. Jags are favored by 3 in Jacksonville. I have not been impressed by the Jaguars whatsoever this year. Never, I picked them to win the AFC South, but it's not like I thought they were going to be some dominant team. Like some people say, I don't think Trevor Lawrence is an insanely special quarterback. I think he's good. I think he's top 10, but that's kind of by default because there's not a lot of great quarterbacks in the league nowadays. But Falcons, Jags. Jags at home. Falcons coming off a bad loss to the Lions. All right. I'll give me the Jags minus three, even though I don't feel good about that pick at all. Bengals, Titans. So Titans are 2.5 point underdogs to the Bengals in Tennessee. Bengals got a nice win last night, but honestly, the Rams are not that good of a team. They got some good weapons, and Stafford looks fine this year, but that old line is terrible, and their, defense going up against a Joe Burrow on essentially one leg, it's not that impressive a performance. So, give me the Titans plus 2.5. I don't know if they win, but I think they cover in Tennessee. We're still waiting for a Derrick Henry breakout game. Those happen like once or twice a year where it goes for 200 yards. Maybe we'll see that in that game. Browns, Ravens. Browns favored by 2.5. The Browns defense is fantastic. Deshaun Watson finally played a good game last week. And it's in Cleveland and the AFC North. When it comes down to division showdowns, it's usually I always just take the whichever team's at home outside of if the Browns play the Bengals. In that case, I'll just take the Browns regardless. But minus 2.5 for the Browns at home. I'll take it. I'll take it. Because the Ravens, all in all, have not looked great on offense or defense this year. And, I like the Browns' chances to, hold the Ravens to less than 10 points. So, yeah, give me the Browns minus 2.5. Bear. Oh, here we go. The shitty bowl. Broncos, Bears. Broncos favored by 3 in Chicago. That just goes to show how bad the Vegas thinks the Bears are. But believe it or not, I'm going to take the Bears here because, it's not a great defense that Justin Fields is going up against. Not a great pass rush. Will he finally decide to run the ball a lot more and, not try to become a pocket passer that we all know he isn't? I think he'll maybe do that this week. Again, not really saying if they're going to win, but Bears plus 3, if you want to take them outright, be my guest. All right, game of the week, Dolphins, Bills. In Buffalo, Bills minus 3. The last time we saw the Dolphins play on the road, that was last week, I think it was. But last time we saw them play, an AFC East team, Patriots, the Patriots low key held the Dolphins somewhat in check. Jalen Waddle, did not. Jalen Waddle played the first half of that game against the Patriots. Looked really, really good. And now his status against the Bills is probably in question. If he's out, I think I'll take the Bills in this game because, Tyreek Hill is going to eat no matter what. But, the Dolphins defense hasn't looked that impressive. And Josh Allen, since the debacle against the Jets, has looked pretty good. So I'll go Bills money line. I'm not confident in taking the spread. I would just stay away from the spread on that one. I think this game's going to be tight. Rams Colts, essentially a pick 'em. Colts at home. Give me the Rams bounce back. Gardner Minshew will play a bad game unless he doesn't play. Honestly, either way, either Minshew or Richardson plays, I'll predict that either of those two will have two or more turnovers and the Rams come out with a win. Texans plus 3 at home against the Steelers. Texans coming off a big win against the Jags. CJ Stroud has looked the best out of all the rookie QBs by a pretty good margin, so that I can respect. But I don't know. It's still not a great team, and the Steelers, I think, will just suffocate them. Neither offense is great. Actually, Texans offense actually is probably better than the Steelers. But Kenny Pickett looked a little better. He's getting better every single week. Experienced Mike Tomlin team going up against a rookie quarterback. Give me the Steelers minus 3. Buccaneers, Saints. So both teams coming off relatively embarrassing losses. Saints choking a 17-point lead in the fourth quarter. Buccaneers literally not being able to move the ball against the Eagles in Tampa. So tough one. Saints might be starting Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston against his former team. Sure, I'll take the Saints minus three. Vikings Panthers. Panthers 3.5 point underdogs against the 3.5 point underdogs against the Vikings. I mean, geez, you got two 0-4 teams here. Kind of, sorry, 0-3 teams. Kind of hard to choose, but Vikings still have Cousins playing out of his mind statistically this year, and and obviously Justin Jefferson and Madison, ran the ball incredibly well finally against the Chargers. This seems more like a track meet for the Vikings. They'll just be able to score at will, and I don't see the Panthers really doing much. Give me the Vikings 3.5, get their first win of the season. Eagles Commanders at home in Philly, tough environment for Sam Howell, tough defense. It's a lot of points, but I'm pretty fairly confident the Eagles will win by 10. So give me the Eagles on that. And then what other games do we have here? So Chiefs, Jets. Okay. All right. So we got a couple more here. Chargers, Raiders. This game could also end up being a track meet. S fairly similar to the Chargers Vikings game on Sunday. And minus 5.5, that's a lot of points. But Brian Hoyer will potentially be starting for the Raiders on Sunday, so yeah, I'll take the Chargers minus 5.5. Patriots Cowboys. Mean, this is tough. I can't imagine Mac Jones will be able to move the ball against Dallas, especially a team coming off an embarrassing loss. Usually teams against the teams do fairly well against the spread after coming off an embarrassing loss. That has to be, good teams, I should say. And I know the Cowboys are a good team. Really weird loss to the Cardinals, but I don't think this will, I think this will be a harsh, very much a motivation factor here. And it's in Dallas. Give me the Cowboys to cover the spread, minus 7 against the Patriots. Cardinals 49ers. So the 49ers in San Francisco favored by 14 points against the Cardinals. I'm not even going to talk about this game. Either way, it's not like the Cardinals are going to win or even look that good. Their Super Bowl was last week, so I don't expect them to match that performance and be able to keep up with 49ers speed on the outside. So yeah, I'll take the 49ers. If I had to put a gun to my head and choose against the spread, I'd take the 49ers minus 14. Chiefs, Jets. The game that is on Sunday Night Football for some reason. Well, we all know the reason. Aaron Rodgers was supposed to play in it. I really have no idea. I mean, I can't. It's in New York, but Zach Wilson just looks worse and worse and worse. Oh, man, I was wrong on that guy. Give me the Chiefs to cover the 9.5 point spread. They won't be able to. There's no way the Jets can keep up. And a great defense against Zach Wilson and a good pass rush. Expect 3+ turnovers from that guy. And lastly, Seahawks, Giants. So the Giants are favored by 1.5 in New York against the Seahawks. I'm not. Believe it or not, I haven't been impressed by the Seahawks at all. I didn't really believe in them going into the season. A lot of inconsistencies with the play of Geno Smith. Last year, he was probably the most consistent quarterback in the league, and that's just consistency and being good is not something that's really in Geno Smith's DNA. So, I don't know. Can the Giants finally, like, get their shit together against a beatable opponent in New York? I mean, you damn sure hope so, but I don't know. Without Saquon Barkley, potentially, give me the Seahawks to win outright, plus 1.5. All right. So that is the lines for today. We're going to do one more segment. Let's head over to ESPN, look at the top headlines, see what's been going on in sports. So the first one, a very sad day. Hall of Fame third baseman and Orioles star Brooks Robinson dies I didn't really know much about Brooks Robinson until I played MLB The Show. He had a couple cards. I didn't own any of them. They weren't very good. You know, old school baseball player, not really, you know, can't say I have much emotion in this, but old man lived a good long life. Rest in peace, Brooks Robinson. Aaron Rodgers now was on Pat McAfee today and said the Jets need to grow up and not point fingers. So it seems like Aaron Rodgers is defending Zach Wilson. So f that points right at Zach Wilson because everyone's fingers are pointed at him. I don't know who else, who I don't know where else you can point other than to Zach Wilson. And he's saying the Jets need to grow up and not point fingers. So he's obviously looking at, you know, Michael Carter's incident with the running backs coach on the sidelines. He's looking at, you know, Garrett Wilson and Zach Wilson arguing on the sidelines. And then he's also, you know, looking at Sauce Gardner deactivating his Twitter account. Do the Jets need to grow up? Sure. Do they maybe not point, shouldn't point fingers at Zach Wilson? Probably. But all in all, this season is a dud. I mean, what are you going to do? You bring in a quarterback to potentially win some games, fine. He's not going to win that many games. And, you know, I think personally, just play out the season, play out Zach Wilson. You'll probably get a really good draft pick, and then you got Aaron Rodgers coming back. So this whole season is a dud. Anytime Aaron Rodgers tears his Achilles, the season is always going to be a dud. Anytime your star quarterback tears his Achilles, it's going to be a dud. I don't know why you're trying to save this season. Is it because after the first week, you beat the Bills? You needed Josh Allen to play the worst game he's played in a year. And, you know, you need all the stars to align with, you know, 9/11 and, you know, Jets fans still having like hype for this season because they don't know how bad Zach Wilson is. Well, you won that game. And you haven't, and you've lost two straight, and the offense has looked horrendous. So, I don't know. I think if I were the Jets GM, I would not bring in a quarterback that would replace Zach Wilson and, you know, try to salvage the season. I just let Zach Wilson play out. If he eventually looks like he's shown some improvement, well, he can sit behind Aaron Rodgers for at least another year. And hopefully he improves some more up off that. Or if he looks terrible, you get a top draft pick, because the Jets with Zach Wilson won't win more than four games. Maybe you draft a quarterback there. Maybe you draft one, and maybe you get another skill position player, and then draft a quarterback later. Get rid of Zach Wilson, and you know Aaron Rodgers is your quarterback again. But that's what I would do. Breanna Stewart wins MVP. Asia Wilson says it hurt like hell. Don't give a shit. Lou Holtz stands by remarks, says Ohio State is good, not great. I mean, I don't know. He's an old man. He's not going to just come out and say, like, oh, yeah, I was wrong. Sorry, Ryan Day. But, you know, that's who he is. Lou Holtz is definitely a guy that's just going to stand by his takes. And Ohio State won. It was a great win. So this Chandler Jones situation with the Raiders is incredibly weird, and honestly, I know exactly where I'm leaning for this. So he said he was hospitalized against his will. He's in a mental hospital. He says he's doing perfectly fine. Well, you know what crazy people say? They say they're not crazy. So, and also what he's been posting on his social media has been weird. I don't know how he can say he's not okay when he's doing the shit he's doing right now, and he's in a mental hospital. I guarantee you, a lot of people that are in mental hospitals right now say that it's against their will. They're perfectly normal. My family put me up to this. I don't want to be here. That's what everyone thinks. So can't say I'm really on Chandler Jones' side here. And then police investigating ex-NFL player Mike Williams' death. I didn't really read much into this. But you know, good. Hopefully they can get him justice. I don't know if he was murdered or something. But next, so speaking of the Jets, they're signing Trevor Siemian today. And Colin Kaepernick asked to be considered. Okay, so the Colin Kaepernick thing, I don't even really want to give that the time of day. He's Colin Kaepernick. He hasn't played football in 6 years now. I don't think he's going to really be great. I mean, not to mention the last workout he had that was like filmed by people. People said he didn't even look that good. The last workout he had that like actually had top NFL agents, NFL scouts. People said it was, not a great workout. So I'm not gonna even come close to saying that Colin Kaepernick should be on an NFL roster. But the Jets signed Simeon, so that's a guy that probably is the best quarterback on the Jets right now. Are the Jets bringing him in as a mentor? We'll have to see. Zach Wilson will for sure be starting this week, though, because Trevor Siemian cannot, hasn't cleared his physical yet, and I don't think we'll be. And it's been said that he won't be ready by Sunday night, so we'll at least get one more week of Zach Wilson. After that, we'll see what the signing means for the Jets. If, they're just bringing in a guy to compete with Zach or to take or just to mentor him. And then lastly, we obviously saw Taylor Swift at the Chiefs Bears game, and apparently Kelce jersey sales see a 400% spike. I mean, wow. You can't underestimate the power of the Swifties. Taylor Swift has the most unbelievable fan base in the world. Every Taylor Swift fan I've talked to will, go to the depths of hell for her, and that is, I guess, fine. I'd go to the depths of hell for Aaron Rodgers, but I'm not gonna go out and cry if I saw him in person like Swifties do it. I looked at every Taylor Swift concert. I think, first off, can we all agree, if you cry at a concert, unless the song is just insanely powerful and really sad, or if it reminds you of someone from your past, nobody should be crying just because they're in the presence of someone. That's something that I've always found weird with Taylor Swift fans, and honestly, just music fans in general. People that are just so obsessed with the artists they like that they have to just cry when they're in the presence of them at a concert. It's not like they're gonna come up and see you, and it's not like they even know you're there. They don't even know that you're crying about them. Why even cry? It's a person, just like the rest of us. But yeah, Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift seems to be officially dating, and I guess it's cool. I feel like Taylor Swift could use a guy like Travis Kelce, not just some, celebrity that can break her heart. Just a fun, athlete. I don't think she's ever dated an athlete, so this will be new speed for her. All right, lastly, just to quickly end this show, I'm going to give you my top 10 quarterbacks in college football, and this is not based on their prospect, how good of a prospect will they be for the NFL? This is just from what I've seen on the field, who I think is the best. Here we go. So, honorable mentions that did not make the list. Cam Ward has been playing great football for Washington State so far this year. He's got him ranked 16, I think, which I'm happy about because that makes the Badger loss look a little better. So, losing at Washington State against a six against now the 16th ranked team in the country. It's a respectable loss. Next, we have Joe Milton. Honestly, in terms of statistics, it's not really an argument for Joe Milton, but God damn, does he have the best arm in college football. It's a toy. It is a toy. He can flick his wrist, and the ball goes 60 yards downfield into the bucket. Now, unfortunately, sometimes that ball can land right in the hands of a defensive back, but, what are you going to do? He's a gunslinger. Jaden Daniels, since the Florida State loss, has looked really, really good. I'm a fan of Jaden Daniels. And then Cam Rising, who hasn't played a snap this season. But Utah is in a great place. They're one of the best teams in the country, or they're ranked number 10 right now. And once they bring Cam Rising back, they're an immediate contender for the Pac-12 and arguably the College Football Playoff. All right, number 10, I got Drew Aller. Drew Aller is bringing something to the Penn State program that they have really not seen, which is a downfield passing threat. Trace McSorley and Sean Clifford, Trace was more of just a really good playmaker, and Sean Clifford was kind of more of a game manager. Drew Aller, they're kind of getting, a prototypical NFL style quarterback that, will eventually be a first round pick. Got good size. He's a cannon for an arm. And he really brings some to the Penn State program that they haven't gotten, which is why Penn State's a really dangerous team. They're sixth in the country and could 100% beat Ohio State or Michigan, and they play them both this year. Number 9, I got Jordan Travis. Jordan Travis is living up to the hype this year. Florida State themselves are living up to the hype. You know, I was a little skeptical when I saw them at, you know, ranked, I believe they started the season ranked 9th or 8th or something. Even and really the biggest reason why they were is because, you know, they had a great end of the season last year, but not against great opponents. So not really sure why they were getting that much hype. And Jordan Travis has played really well. And, you know, they got great skill position players on the outside, obviously, and Johnny Wilson and Keon Coleman. But Jordan Travis is the engine that makes it all go. And, you know, he's a contender for the Heisman this year. And I got him at 9. Number 8, I have Shedeur Sanders. Last week was an abomination. But what's going to happen, you know, no matter if you got a 5-star quarterback that could be the first overall pick in next year's draft, like Shedeur Sanders, you can't win with that offensive line and your defense not being able to stop Lick. You know, I still think he's a great quarterback. What I saw from him in the Colorado State game, especially in the fourth quarter, you know, coming back and, you know, leading a 98-yard touchdown drive, that was impressive. You can tell he has NFL. I mean, he obviously has NFL DNA, and you can tell he has, you know, the stones to lead a team. And if he was on, you know, any like Power Five team that could get a top 10 recruiting class, you know, he'd be a Heisman contender. And he was before, but he's not going to win enough games to be able to, you know, be in the Heisman conversation, unfortunately. Number 7, I got Sam Hartman. You know, played his tail off against Ohio State. You know, before that game was playing tremendous football. And even against Ohio State, didn't play bad. Still hasn't turned the ball over, I don't think, this year, which is good. You know, he's an experienced guy. He's, you know, after this season, will be in the top 10, maybe top 8 of every NCAA passing category. So, you know, he's a guy that Notre Dame definitely needed. You know, they need not only some skill at the quarterback position, but some actual experience in years past that they haven't had. You know, in terms of teams that have been able to contend for the college football playoff. Last one they had was Ian Book, and you know he was experienced but not a lot of talent. I think Sam Hartman has a decent amount of talent. So number 6 is Drake May. If I was going off just NFL prospect, he'd be number 2 on this list, but he's number 6 because he's turning the ball over a little bit too much. But you know, North Carolina is undefeated, and you know, the 15th ranked team in the country. It's impressive, and it's still not a great roster. So a lot of the mistakes he's making are just kind of him trying to make a play and be Superman because that's what his team needs him to do. But I like Drake May a lot. He'll probably be the second quarterback taken next year. So he's at number 6. Number 5, JJ McCarthy. Michigan is arguably the best team in the country at this point, and JJ McCarthy has them, you know, in a spot that really they haven't seen before. They really haven't been in their program's history, which is, you know, one of the best teams in the country with a great established quarterback. Shea Patterson was never really the guy. Cade McNamara wasn't really the guy. And all the years before that, it's just been a dumpster fire. Now they actually got a bona fide, you know, 5-star first round quarterback in JJ McCarthy, and you can see the level that he's bringing them this year for their program, and obviously last year, but wasn't really established yet. This year, everyone knows who JJ McCarthy is. Number 4, Quinn Ewers. I'm still a Quinn Ewers fan, but to be perfectly honest, the only really great game he's played this year, he's had some nice games, but against really bad competition, the only great game he's played this year has been against Alabama. And obviously, you can say that's a compliment, which it can be, but it's also like, all right, so you played good against Alabama. Why aren't you beating the hell out of these bad teams like Wyoming, who they were tied with at half? So I can't say I can put Quinn Ewers higher than 4th when I've really only seen him play one good game, but that one good game was against Alabama in Tuscaloosa, so that's why he is at 4. Number 3 is Bo Nix. Bo Nix has played perfect this year. He really has. He threw his first interception last week against Colorado, I think. No, he threw his first. I believe he threw his first interception of the season against Colorado on Saturday. But other than that, the guy's been fantastic. Now he's been playing against some bad defenses. Colorado's not a great defense, and obviously Texas Tech and Portland State aren't worth a shit either. But in terms on the defensive side, obviously, but you know, Bo Nix is him and Sam Hartman, two most experienced quarterbacks in college football. And I think Bo Nix is, after last season, he's had a really up and down career. He had like one good year with Auburn, a couple really bad years, transfers to Oregon, plays really good last year. And now people are waiting to see, like, okay, if he continues to play good this year, not only is he a contender for the Heisman, but he's actually proving himself to be a first round draft pick. And I think he's doing that exactly. So, and with the experience and where Oregon's at as a team, I think Bo Nix at three is a good spot. Now, the 2 and 1, I think, are fairly obvious. These two are going at it for the Heisman Trophy. Both are, putting up insane numbers. I have Michael Penix at two and Caleb Williams at one. It's really hard for me to put anyone above Caleb Williams. I mean, he's got 17 touchdowns this year to zero interceptions. And, with how USC looks on offense, with they got a couple nice running backs and then three really good receivers, Zachariah Branch, Taj Washington, and Dorian Singer. I mean, it's a lot. Their offense is always going to be good with Lincoln Riley, but this year USC has an offense that can actually carry them to a national championship. And, Caleb Williams is on track to do just that. So it's hard for me to put anyone else at one, especially when he's going to be the number one pick in the draft next year, fairly this upcoming year, and a fairly easy decision there. Michael Penix is looking fantastic. I mean, every time I look up, it's halftime. Washington's up by 3 touchdowns, and Michael Penix has thrown for 200 yards and 3 touchdowns at half. I mean, he's doing this. He did all of this last year. Nobody really cared. Now Washington, with the defense that they have and the two great receivers on the outside with Ray, with McMillan and Rome Odunze, that Washington USC game is going to be something. That will be for the Heisman. So I'm excited to see. Let me check what day that is. USC versus Washington. November 4th at USC. So that'll be a great game. That'll probably be for the Heisman Trophy. So I'd keep in touch with that. But yeah, Michael Penix has looked fantastic this year, and he's actually giving Caleb Williams a run for his money for the Heisman, which people didn't think was really going to happen this year. So, looks like that's going to be our show. That's my list, top 10 quarterbacks in college football. Did a great job this week. Hopefully next week we have, a Packer win to talk about, and maybe some other news going on in the sports world that I can bring up. Colorado plays USC this week. I hope Colorado puts up a better fight than they did against Oregon. Oregon's defense is better than USC, so it might be better, but Caleb Williams, the USC offense might not punt the ball the entire game on Saturday. We'll see. Thanks for having me in your, thanks for, listening to me today, and we'll see you next week.